I'm on my way to the Okanagan Highlands on the very northern edge of central Washington State. Going to go see Ernie and Erica. They've got some brand new rocket mass heater innovations that I'm involved in. And so we're going to work out some designs and some new materials. And the idea is that we might possibly be able to have something to make it so that people can build a rocket mass heater with probably about 10 times less effort than they were previously, and using more conventional means, like cob is an option, but like maybe a more permanent structure could possibly be the wood style with the river rock in it. So we're going to do a bunch of interesting things in that space. This is yet another podcast from when I'm sitting in the car by myself, which, you know, up until the last one, I was always sure that those would be horrible and nobody would want to listen to them. And then I keep getting this feedback of like, no, that's my favorite kind. And so, okay, all right, I'll be up for making some more then that way. Although it's kind of limited to what I can think of as I go down the road, as opposed to like, oh, I'm looking at my notes. I know what to talk about. The thing that got me going on this one was that something did pop into my head, which seemed kind of seemed like a big deal to me, and that is that it's always kind of been a little bit of a mystery to me how it is like at Code Ranch. There's, you know, 40 volunteers running the site, and then of course we've got the staff out of Permies, and then we've got people like Josiah Wallingford chipping in stuff, and it occurred to me, and it's so obvious, and I'm a dumbass for having not thought of it earlier, and that is that it's not that they're doing it as a gift to me, it's that they're doing it as a gift to themselves. And so each person is doing it because they expect to receive a greater benefit from their effort. So, you know, I would say that if somebody is an administrator or, you know, they got admin access at Permies, and they're one of the stewards at the forums at Permies, then they have the ability to help shape how good discussion happens. And yeah, that comes from deleting the stuff that doesn't meet the standards. You know, all of the things in that space, like helping to, you know, set the pace for, like, what would be a good forum to create and you know, what would be a good direction to go for this and that. So basically, it's like with participation in the forums, then there is reward. And it's kind of like, I know that there's a lot of permaculture stuff that I want to learn, and then if I just go out and try and find it, then it's kind of like the wheat to chaff ratio is terrible. If I go out and I start cruising the internet through Google, I mean, how do you find out about a rocket mass heater if you've never heard about a rocket mass heater before? And so, it's, you know, what would be, you know, how would you ever discover it? And so there's so much stuff that's important, and then there's all this other stuff going on that it's hard to pick out, like, which one is really a good idea, and what's like greenwashing or just, you know, just nuts. And so I think that what we're trying to do is we're trying to have Permies really push a certain kind of discussion. And that means, and the reason why it's moving forward this way is because there's volunteers, people who have a mindset similar to mine. It's like, I want to know. I need to know more. There is more. And it kind of comes back to that whole idea of HUST. And it's like, how do we how do we get back this knowledge that we would have had if history had gone down a little different? You know, if we started, if permaculture was the norm 400 years ago, what would permaculture be like today? Or what would we see today that might be evolving well past permaculture? And in order to be able to see these ideas and then hear about different people with different farms trying different things, then we need a place that's going to facilitate these kinds of thoughts. And I think a lot of times there's been ideas that I've had for my farm where it's like, I think I'm going to do this, and then I mention it on a forum somewhere, and then I can get like 20 other ideas, which then lead me to think of something that's like 10 times better. And then I project my idea that's 10 times better, and then can sometimes get a bunch of ideas that come back, and I can make it 30% better than that before I have done anything. And it just seems like these are the kinds of things that I really want to see fleshed out at Permies. This is the kind of forum I want to have, something that embraces farming innovation. And, you know, let's keep in mind that, you know, some things might work in one area better than others. So I think that's what we're creating. And I think the thing to do is that in order to have a place like that, you have to build a place like that. And it's an ongoing process. And so I think each person who contributes to Permies.com says, of all the places I've been to, this place is the closest. So if I ask my questions here and I share my thoughts here, I get closer to having that which I seek. And when I have a new idea and I need to find a bunch of like-minded people to help me move that idea forward, I've built a reputation here, and I've helped to build a community here, and this community will help me. So it's a return on investment. And so it has nothing, really, nothing to do with like, here, Paul, here's some candy, here's a gift for you. It really has nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with people are serving themselves. They contribute because there is reward in it for them. I've been thinking about this all wrong and going about this all wrong, and it just has to do with the fact that I've forgotten or never figured out or whatever. And so now I think I'm in a much better space about that. Next up is that I've been asked. Somebody asked me the other day about a project that's going on south of Portland, Oregon, and I did hear a little bit about it. And so Jenny Pell's in charge, and she's a lovely woman who is a well-known permaculture person in the Pacific Northwest. I know that she's done some traveling down in South America. So she's spearheading a project down there. I think she's spearheading it, but she's involved one way or another. But I heard something where she was visiting with somebody about it, and I've heard more about it from a couple of different sources. So the idea is that if you're thinking I want to be a permaculture person, then they've got a bunch of acreage down there, and you can go down there and set up shop. And so I like the idea that there's like 100,000 projects like this across the United States, and each one's a little different. It sounds like what you'll do is that when you hear about this project, then and I know her website is permaculturenow.com. But when you go, when it's like, okay, let's say you want to be part of it. You want to go there. You want to have a little chunk of land to do your permaculture thing and whatnot. So my understanding is that in order to do that, you need to submit a business plan. And then a group of people are going to then evaluate whether or not you are a match for their property. And and whether or not you'll be allowed to come onto the property and do your thing. And I'm not sure what all the other details are, like, do you pay to be there, or, like, I imagine you probably need to at least rent the land. And then they're going to want to know, like, how permaculture are you, or something like that, or maybe instead of permaculture you're into biodynamic, or something like that. So those kinds of things. It sounded like there would be layers of people deciding, and there would be I kind of got the feeling like there'd be 3 months of back and forth of paperwork until decisions were made, but I could be wrong about that. I guess you know, part of my thinking was, is it's like, well, I think that if I were to apply, that I just have a feeling that I would be denied, and that's okay. I'm not exactly sure of the details, but I just kind of have this feeling, I guess. But maybe it would be something that would be a fit for some people. Maybe it is for some of my podcast listeners. And maybe it would be something worth looking into. And on top of that, it's like, you know, so much of this is like, if you're looking for property right now, like I had one guy saying, you know, wow, I found this, that there was property over in the Spokane area for $38,000, and you could get like 20 acres. And I told the guy, it's like, yes, I'm sure there is property like that, and then you can move on to your bare land and get started with permaculture stuff. And in fact, I know of somebody who, not far from the Spokane area, managed to get 5 acres, and I think that they did $500 down, and they're paying $250 a month for the 5 acres. And they've set up shop there. They're living there now. So these kinds of opportunities are indeed available and out there. But the land is going to probably be not the best, and there might be some mysterious shortcomings. I know that the land that I had in the Spokane area, I picked it up for like $280,000 and for 80 acres, and that was more than 10 years ago. And then after living there for a few months, I found out that there was an abandoned uranium mine about 100 yards off of one of the borders, which did not please me. And I also found out that doing anything even close to organic was like considered by the neighborhood to be crazy hippie shit. And so, it kind of makes interaction with some of the neighbors and some of the community difficult, because, you know, you're not spraying everything like everybody else. And so then because of that, they very much want, you know, to notify the Department of Making You Sad for there to be spray. So I want to come back to Jenny Pell's project. I really like the idea that they're going to have something, because I kind of think, like, isn't that a great way to fly? I mean, so many times with intentional community, it's like, it's so difficult to get it going on a piece of land. That with an intentional community, the idea is that you can buy 200 acres for, you know, perhaps $500,000, and then somebody can come along and say, I think I want to be part of this, and then getting in and getting started can be really easy, and not require $10,000. Although I think like Earthhaven, it's $10,000 to get started there. Or it used to be. I think in the original days it was. Now it might be something closer to like $30,000 or $40,000 to get started at Earthhaven. But then, and then at this piece of property, they're using they're not using consensus on Jenny Pell's property. They're using I can't remember it. Sociocracy, I think it is, something like that. Something which I'm not familiar with. I've heard of it like a dozen times, and I haven't, and I think I probably had a couple of different people explain it to me, and I'm sorry I didn't retain it, and I haven't really looked into it. maybe it's awesome. I don't know. But I just kind of get the feeling that I would, like, if I were to apply, I would be getting judged by people that don't understand my techniques, and what they want to hear are things that they're familiar with. And that's what it is. It's judging. They're going to probably say, oh, you should never judge anybody. But of course, you know, they're going to judge whether or not they want to let you come in on their property. And, you know, their metric set, I suspect, will be different than my metric set, which is great. That's great. I love the idea, like I said, that there's 100,000 of these all over the United States. So, and now I'm really stepping up stuff to get my chunk of land, and John Trask is going to be helping me with that. And he has now moved to Missoula. He now lives in Missoula. So we're gonna be working together on getting this chunk of land. That kind of led me into thinking about, you know, like some ideas that I've been having about my land. Well, and I guess to compare for just getting in, I think that, you know, one of the things I'm doing by projecting through the podcasts and through videos and articles and stuff like that is to make it clear to people where I stand on so many different things. And then I think a great metric, somebody was asking me about this, and I think, and so right now, like John is staying with, he's parked his fifth wheel trailer at Caleb and Krista's, and it's like, well, will they get along? And Caleb and Krista were like, I don't know if we want some guy here. And John was like, I don't know if I want to go someplace where I don't know the people. And so then the thing I pointed out to each of them was, well, you know what? The lot of you have listened to all of my podcasts. Now you got to think that if you wouldn't get along, or, you know, or imagine what kind of person you are if you listen to like three or four and say, this guy's an ass, and then you shut it off and you don't listen anymore. But what kind of person listens to all of them? I mean, doesn't that kind of thin the herd a bit? Don't you end up being pretty similar, pretty like-minded? I mean, if nothing else, you know, I've talked before about how I believe most conflict is rooted in a difference of knowledge set. And so now, aren't the knowledge sets rather well aligned? So if you've got somebody who's listened to all of my podcasts, haven't they kind of gone through a bit of a gauntlet? And now it's probably, if it's somebody else who's listened to all of my podcasts, aren't they going to be very like-minded? So now John has arrived, and they are all finding out that they have a lot in common, and it's working out great. And the land hunt begins. So rather than like having an application process of like, oh, let's have you you know, write down your ideas down here, that was another thing I kind of thought of too, was it's kind of like, you know, if I have to write down my ideas on what I want to do as a business plan before I move on to the land, I kind of feel a little bit like, you know what, I kind of want it to be the other way around. I want to see the chunk of land I'm going to be working with, and then I want to, you know, bond with the land a little bit and then kind of get an idea of, like, what am I going to do here? Plus, the other thing is with permaculture, like when I was on the 80 acres on Mount Spokane, I tried a bunch of different things, and then the thing that really started to make the money was pork. I just did, the pigs were amazing there. And so it's kind of like, I didn't know that ahead of time. And at the same time, all these crops I thought I was going to grow, they were very stunted and they didn't do well. And it wasn't until my last year there that I found out that it's like, oh, we... You know, I mean, I thought, oh, when I did soil tests before, there's an excessive level of P and K in the soil. Right, understand, got that. But then it like, you know, I thought, okay, well, then I don't have to add P and K, no problem. And then it wasn't until my last year there that I realized I had such high levels of P and K that they were stunting the growth of a lot of the things I was trying to grow. And so then what I needed to do was to plant something that could tolerate high levels of P and K, pull that out of the soil, so that way the remaining soil would then have, like, simply high levels of P and K, but not crazy high levels. And then everything started to flourish. So it's kind of like, yeah, if I go in there thinking, and it seems like this is what a lot of people do, I'm going to raise watermelons, and I'm going to have a watermelon farm. And it's kind of like, then you get there, and then you find out whether or not the soil is really good for watermelons, and then you find out, oh, by the way, you have to raise some pigs, and it turns out the pigs do really good on the land. So I kind of think that it's hard to make a business plan when going in. You try 100 things, and then you find out what really sings on that land, as opposed to like you try 2 or 3 things, and then you have to require that that's what's going to be your business model. All right, so setting that aside, I think that for getting onto the land, I really like the idea that somebody says that they've listened to all the podcasts. And then it's kind of like, rather than saying, submit this form or this application and we're going to see if we can approve you, I like what I've seen in some other intentional communities where it's kind of like, you know, if you've met this criteria, and I think another one is like putting some money up. Like if you're going to put up $2,000, like as, I don't know, a deposit or something, then it kind of shows a level of commitment. Because the other thing is like as much as the party coming in knows me, I don't know the other party. And so I don't know you. If you're coming, if you're listening to this podcast now and you want to come on and be on the land, you now have a really good idea of who I am. And so like when I was at the SEP event and there were so many people who knew me because they've listened to all of the podcasts, it's like, I really don't know them. And I got to know them a little bit and everything. And there were some people I really liked, John Trask being one of them. It's like, what would be something, you know, to like be able to, cause like the other thing is I don't want to take a lot of time and I don't want to read, all of these, applications and stuff. That sounds like work. I know that when I was in the geek industry that I did 450 technical interviews, you know, during my career. And this is where I'm interviewing people that are wanting to come work. I did a few going the other way too, but it's kind of like the idea was is that we need to build a team and we need to build a team fast and we need to develop some product fast. This is the internet and everything's fast. We do everything fast. We have to have our product out there in 3 months. So quick, build a team over the next 3 days, and let's get to work. And so and then most people, I'd say 98% of the people that do interviews, they have this long, drawn-out process that covers weeks, and the interview itself can be like a half a day or a full day. And I just kind of felt like that was really inefficient, and so I came up with a system where in 10 minutes I could find out whether I want to work with them and how much I would pay them if I do want to work with them. And I would ask everybody these exact same questions, and so it was a very, very fast process. And I like that. I think that there's more important things to do than sitting around. And then you bring them in, and then you see how it goes. And if they turn out to be awful, then you can get rid of them. But with the hiring process that I used, I don't remember, I hired a lot of people, hired, I don't know, 40 to 60 or so, and I don't remember any of them turning, well, no, there was one. There was one person that I hired and who turned out to be icky. And, so I think that there's good processes there. But, okay, so back to the thing, they've listened to all the podcasts. I think if nothing else, that's quite a gauntlet, and I think that that's a pretty good way to enter in, and then I think, you know, of course I would think there'd be some sort of either rental situation. I do think that there's going to be a plethora of different ways, different kinds of relationships for somebody to be on the land. I think some people are going to rent an existing thing, and they have an outside job and outside income streams. And then basically the fact that they are on the land paying rent then provides a cash flow in order to be able to do other projects. Then there's going to be some people that are going to be very big into permaculture and eco-building and things like that. And so there will be some sort of arrangement where they effectively don't pay anything. provided that they continue to contribute. I think that there's going to be all kinds of stories in between. Will it be woofers? I don't know if there'll be woofers. I imagine that there probably will. I'm a big fan of that. I do think that the property is going to transition over time, and start off something rather open, and then evolve to something, you know, like being less of a train station. I think I'm all done talking about Jenny Pell's project. I was asked about that project, and so now that was my effectively my answer. I really hope that it is a successful project. We see a lot of really cool things coming from that piece of land, I'm I'm looking forward to it. But when John and I are talking about things that we're going to do on this piece of property that we're looking for, one of the things that we are exploring is the idea of different levels of permaculture. And so I've been thinking of it as like, talking about this scale I sometimes talk about where, level zero is food that is not legal to be sold to human beings, but it is, legal to be sold as feed for animals. And then there's level one, which is USDA has determined that this food is allowable to be sold as food. And this would be the kind of food that you might find at a Denny's restaurant. Level two might be food that is available at a McDonald's restaurant. Level three and four might be food that you can find at Safeway. Then level 10 would be technically labeled organic, and this might be organic food that you find at Safeway, and then level 12 might be labeled organic, but food that you find at Whole Foods or the Good Food Store, and then there might even be some food that you can find at Whole Foods or the Good Food Store that might be level 14 to 16 or something like that, and I think that's about as far as it goes for food that can be purchased right now. So I like the idea that the farms start off divided into three areas. So the first area is going to be, I'm thinking of it, and there's going to be a better name for it than this, but shooting from the hip, using the scale, level 100. And so we're shooting for things that are going to be part of this, and I think this is only going to be like 4 acres out of 200, 4 acres. So this is level 100. And so this is a place where a car can drive up there, a gasoline-powered vehicle, and you're going to not use cardboard in any of the horticultural things. There is use of plastics. There is use of internet and cell phones. And we're trying very hard to do a very, far beyond organic kind of a thing. So this is level 100. Then I think that the rest of the farm will be divided in half. And the first half will be level 1,000. And level 1,000, there's no petroleum allowed. There's you're not allowed to drive a car in there. You're not allowed to, I think that there will be plastics in there, but different kinds of, there'll be a lot of shooting for how do we make things cleaner and more organic. And I think, we'll attempt to minimize the use of plastic, so we won't use very much plastic. But the idea is it will be an order of magnitude more permaculture than that first 4 acres. We'll probably come up with a variety of ideas on how we're going to do that. So it'll be far cleaner, far healthier, things of that nature. And then I want to think about, like, the other half of the farm, the last piece. will be level 10,000. And it's like, and I think that this is going to require a lot of collective thought, which, you know, leads back to the idea that we need more people on the forums to be talking about how do you get, like, what are some of the things that you do to get to level 10,000. But I think one of the properties that we would have at level 10,000 is there are no plastics allowed in there. There's no petroleum products of any kind, and that even the kinds of clothes that people wear into that area will be restricted. And the level, the kinds of cleanliness and the kinds of foods, and even how food is imported will be an issue. And and while I think that we'll allow electric vehicles in the level 1,000 area, I think in the level 10,000 area, I think that we won't allow electric vehicles. I think that there will be a lot of concern over heavy metals in the area, and so the idea is that the level 10,000 space is going to really shoot for an extreme in natural living, I mean, that's I think the level 10,000 area is definitely where we're going to rediscover husk. Where we might talk about the idea of simbiculture, things of that nature. So it's definitely something that's way beyond even what I'm able to think of in my head right now. And I really am going to be depending on innovative discussion going on in the Permies forums over the next year, in order to figure out what all is going to be going on inside of that area. And then I think that a wafadi, I think the type of structure that's going to be, you know, for these is going to be all wafadi. At this point in time, I cannot think of a type of structure that I would be comfortable with for anything. I mean, I think on the level 100, the first one, I think that it's okay to have structures other than wafadis and that. But beyond there, I can't think of anything but a wafadi that would be acceptable. So I am kind of thinking like it's going to be, well, very, very, very clean. And then, you know, I think that the thermal inertial part of the wafadis up at on level 10,000 area, I think that that's going to have to be like very, like, much larger, because it's like I think that probably not a good idea to have smoke, you know. And I think, because like a lot of it is like, well, what is carcinogenic? And so it's kind of like, I think that the level 10,000 area is going to be 10 times, it's going to have 10 times less carcinogens than the level 1,000 area, which will have 10 times less carcinogens than the level 100 area, which will have 10 times less carcinogens than your typical organic farm. That's my thinking at this moment. So smoke, of course, is a carcinogen. And so then it's like, well, then... And on top of that, I kind of feel like electricity is an interesting thought too. I'm kind of thinking like at level 10,000, I kind of think it's possible that we don't want electricity at level 10,000, while having electricity at level 1,000 is okay. And so eventually this will evolve to the point that people who are seriously ill or are environmentally sensitive may come to this place in order to be able to get better, you know, regain their health, in theory. Another one is plumbing. I think that in level 10,000, I think that plumbing might not be a good idea. Plumbing would be, I mean, basically you've got your water sitting in your pipes, and those pipes get stuff in them, And is that good for you, or is that not good for you? As the pipes corrode or off gas or exude something, is that good or not good for you? That's not a for sure thing, but I think it's worth exploring. I'm not sure. Will some people be comfortable living in a house that has no plumbing at all? Will they be comfortable living in a house that has no electricity at all? And then the other thing is when it gets to be night, what is the source of light? Do you just go to bed? Which in Montana, when winter rolls around, it gets dark at 5. Starts getting kind of dark at 4:30, and then it won't get light again until like 7 in the morning. So it's kind of like that makes for kind of a short day. So not really sure here. And so these are things that would need to be figured out and resolved and understood. What is going to be done? I think when we're talking about carcinogens, I think that burning a candle is going to be worse than an electric light bulb. And then if we're talking about like this is an area that doesn't have any electricity, then what happens? I think that these are things. Wow, I would really like to see a discussion on that. I'd also like to get better names than the level 100, 1,000, and 10,000. And maybe the thing to do is to say that the level 10,000 is husk. And maybe the thing to do is to say that the level 1,000 is simbiculture. And the thing to do is to say that the level 100 is permaculture. Maybe that's a good way to go about it. So anyway, these are just some random thoughts that I'm sharing as I'm driving on my way to the Okanagan Highlands. Okay, next note. I'm probably going to go and try and work with Sepp on some of his projects in Asia and Europe, possibly Africa. And of course, when I'm with Sepp, then he doesn't speak a lick of English. So I got together with Susanna Schneider, who was one of the interpreters when Sepp was here 3 years ago, and we started recording a series of podcasts with me trying to learn German. It had to do with the fact that I was trying to learn it in my car, but that wasn't going well. And when I'm not in my car, I've got a ton of other things that are far more important than learning German. And so I just wasn't getting around to it in any way, shape, or form. But the idea is that I took this time to sit down with Susanna and express to her, here's what I'm trying to do, and here's some where I'm struggling. And so we've limited the podcast to 30 minutes, and as a devious plot on the side, we do make it a point to mention permaculture in every podcast, just a little bit. So people, if this is something that helps people learn German, then in theory, it will put the word permaculture in more brains, and that's kind of an important thing to both myself and to Susanna. So that's why she offered to help. She's a big permaculture advocate. So if you know anybody that's trying to learn German, it should be available by the time this podcast goes out, and maybe you could direct people to that. Which leads me to another thing, and that is my daily-ish email. For anybody listening to these podcasts, please sign up for my daily-ish email. It's my way of, if I've got something new and important to say, and I admit, sometimes new and not that important, then that's the place where I go and I have my daily news. And it's like, you know, if it's too much, you can delete the email that comes each day. And sometimes I'll put out two or three in a day, and sometimes I'll put out nothing for like a week. Hence the word daily-ish. I had somebody arguing on a day that I put out two. This is too much. You have to stop. No one's going to want to listen to this. I told them that they needed to unsubscribe. I went and I looked, and it was like for the last 30 days, I had sent out 30 emails. And it's kind of like, you know, Jesus, guy was complaining, and because he'd gotten two in one day. But anyway, so I told him to unsubscribe, and he did. So I really want, I mean, the thing is that when there's something new and important, and it's, and there are times when it's like, oh, here's a thing where I want everybody to know about it, and it's short notice, but this is the way to get the information out. The Daily-ish email has been, I just feel very empowered there. And I hope that, that what I send out is of value to the people receiving it. Right. So I'm driving along. I'm making some notes on what I'm going to put into this podcast. And I got to this part where they're doing some construction, so I slowed down to like all of 2 miles an hour, and I'm next to a nursery. And the nursery is selling railroad ties. You know, for your garden projects, right? So I have people ask me to come and look at their garden and tell them how awesome and amazing it is. So I go to all these gardens, and it's like half of them have railroad ties in it. And that's one of the things I say right off the bat is, you know what, please, you know, I think the first thing you should do is remove those railroad ties. Get them out of here. And I think that it stuns me to this day how people go to build a raised bed garden, and the first thing that they do is buy railroad ties and think that they're being brilliant. And I used to give people advice about, well, put some plastic in between the railroad ties and your soil, because those railroad ties are just so full of toxic yuck. And the plastic will remain inert as long as it doesn't get any sunlight on it. And so, you know, and even if it does, it's still better than the railroad ties. And so you're trading one level of toxicity for a lower level of toxicity. And now it's like, no, you just really gotta take that out. I mean, it's so toxic, really. Take that out. So I don't believe I've ever mentioned that before, but that's like a very common thing I say at a lot of farms that I visit is take out the railroad ties. The other thing is that I'm not sure if I've mentioned this in a podcast before, but that is that a nursery business will go and take seeds, like perennial seeds, and even annual seeds, and plant them in pots and sell them in pots. And then people are like, oh, but I want to get this big head start on growing stuff. So then I'm going to go buy it in a pot or, you know, bare root or in a burlap sack or whatever. I'm going to go buy it half grown from a nursery rather than planting a seed. And it's kind of like, and then people talk about like, oh, this stuff is so expensive and everything. And it's like, well, yeah, if you're paying $20 a tree, and you're talking about planting hundreds of trees, then right, that's going to be insanely expensive. Then there's people that are like, okay, I'm going to buy it from Lawyer Nursery, or I'm going to buy my trees for $1 a tree, and they're much smaller, and I'm going to buy them by the hundreds. And it's like, that still seems expensive to me. Plus, every time you start anything from seed, you're going to lose what taproot there might be. Not only that, but there's going to be transplant shock and stuff like that. And even above that, it just seems like on one end, well, we're supposed to be stewards of the land and we're kind of working with nature and we're going to try and do more than what nature does by herself. I really kind of think that when you plant something in a pot and then you move it into your soil, that just strikes me as unnatural. And it's a kind of unnatural that could be avoided. I mean, planting it from seed is the natural way. And so many of these species do great planted from seed. And so I just kind of, and granted, somebody running a nursery business or somebody, that's another thing too, is it just seems like such a normal thing for people. It's like if you're going to go get an apple tree, you go to the nursery and get an apple tree. Now granted, some people are learning how to graft and stuff like that, and so then they're starting the rootstock in a pot, and maybe it's cloned or maybe it is from seed. And then they're grafting the Scion wood onto that themselves instead of buying it from industry. Look, I saved all this money, and I went and carefully got all this Scion wood and everything. And it's kind of like, wow, you know what would be better is to plant it from seed. And of course, they get the idea that this is the only way to do it because, I mean, nursery, people who run nurseries make money doing that. So then they advocate that. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying that starting it from seed is a better thing. So then the people from nurseries making money doing this, of course, naturally they offer the service and they advocate this way of doing it. And the people who write books on the topic, they're familiar with getting it from a nursery. And then, you know, people want to have an instant garden, instant farm. And so then they kind of, you know, go along with that. And I just kind of want to put an emphasis on, like, there's better ways. And I kind of think that I don't, you know, part of me doesn't want to put the nursery people out of business or anything, but part of me kind of thinks, like, the idea of driving someplace, and of course, when people are doing permaculture, they're going to start, you know, all these different plants, most of which aren't available at a local nursery, so they'll mail order a bunch of plants, and so then so rather than shipping all these plants, how about shipping seeds? They're way smaller, and therefore the amount of petroleum used to move them to you is much less. I don't know. I'm just not sure if I've emphasized enough in the past how I far prefer the idea of starting things from seed rather than starting things from plants. Okay, I think that's the end of my list for now. There you go, another in the car rant. If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com where we talk about seeds, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.